Welcome to the Penny Bloom Podcast. Ain't another place that has got more bombast. Romp past your mom that's listening to Tomcast. Talking everything that make you sad. We don't want that. We're here to make you smile. Put your mind at ease. Peace, love, and bloom. And always praise Keanu Reeves. This what we about. Get some weed in now. We'll talk until we can't no more. And then we peacing out. Alright, let's go. Penny Bloom Podcast. It's the Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to the Penny Bloom Podcast. Today, we officially kick off action movies galore. This week with the anime classic Akira. It was released on July 16th, 1988, with a screenplay by Katsuhiro Otomo, who also wrote the manga, and Izo Hashimoto, and directed by the gentleman who wrote the manga, Katsuhiro Otomo. I am Colton Robertson, and I'm joined by Joseph George. What's up, homie?
Oh, what up, what up? Always a pleasure to be here.
Oh, and it's always a pleasure to have you. And this was a fun one. This was a fun, interesting way to kick off the project in its entirety. I know we did the John Wick franchise and stuff, but that was more an excuse to cover some more Keanu, get some cool action in, kind of preemptive to the project at large. Now we're all over the place for May. Mm-hmm. How are you feeling about this one?
Oh, this is. I've been away from anime for too long. It has been too long, so this was very nice to get back into that vein. It was checking a lot of boxes, and that was nice. The voice acting, I just really appreciate good anime voice acting in this one. I do love the screams, the heightened emotion that people can get to in animation films, and so I did like all that, and definitely, I mean. This did not go down the route that I thought it was going to. The only thing I knew of the movie before this was the Akira slide. I'm like, and I didn't even know really of the Akira slide. I just know it from, I don't know, like other sources. And then, so I'm like, okay, it's a bike movie. That's all in my, you know, that's all I know. And I'm like, okay, so how complicated could a bike movie get? Oh boy, how I was very wrong it just being a bike movie.
No, I was with you. I also only knew the Akira slide, and because I knew the Akira slide, I assumed that the person who did the slide was Akira. Also wrong.
I didn't even realize that one.
Nope, it's the slide from Akira, therefore it is the Akira slide. No, so obviously, I'm not well versed in anime. I've watched some Studio Ghibli films, and I watched Death Note years back, a few episodes of One Piece. But this is aside from some of those Studio Ghibli films, the only certified classic anime I've watched, and I wasn't disappointed. You know, I was like, I've watched very few. And this is like just not the medium because like it's animation. Like I enjoyed Death Note a great deal. I enjoyed a lot. I mean, every single Studio Ghibli film I've watched, and I enjoyed this, but I haven't had a desire to go back to it at all.
And I don't want to make it seem that I'm well versed in anime either. I've probably only watched 3 or 4 shows total, or animes total. So I'm not that well versed either, but I am kind of with you. There's something not quite hitting. It's good, and I enjoy the movie more in the third act. That's really whenever I'm more into the movie. The ending really, really helped save this movie for me, because the first act I had no idea what to expect, and whenever I'm just expecting a biker movie, I'm like, oh, this is cool. Like, cool city, you know, Neo Tokyo. It's all, you know, a nuke, or not a nuke, you know, we don't know what's going on, but what a way to open the movie you know, to just see Tokyo go in an explosion. And I'm like, okay, we're in a completely different world here, you know. So off rip, you just know, like, to suspend a bunch of certain belief. Things. But I don't know. It was a really cool underground, or just the point of destroying Tokyo was to let it make a better version of it. But then you kind of see that it's like, it's not, it's even kind of worse. It's like, I don't know, like it does, it's not good. And it is really, the world they built was really cool as well. I don't know. I did like the world.
No, and I think that the history is really interesting too. I liked that whenever we kick off this movie, and it shows just that imagery of the dome enlarging over Tokyo, and then you know, we cut to 31 years later, 31 years after World War III, mm-hmm. and the idea that this takes place in 2019, which is funny. Just a few years back.
This is where they thought we'd be, you know, like we'd have bikes like this. That'd be so dope. We'd have all this tech where we'd finally be able to figure out. No way. Wait a minute. No, that was before. I was trying to say, did we turn on the Large Hadron, you know, Hadron Collider 2019? No, that was like 2013. Yeah. I was like, that'd be really weird if they guessed that.
Right.
Or they predicted that for 2019, but no.
No, yeah, but I do agree. The world was really interesting. The implied history was really fascinating. And that was one thing that this movie kind of succeeds at for me, was the world building, in my opinion. I know we talked off mic for a little bit about how it was kind of hit or miss for you, but there was a lot of factions of the society and the just nature of Neo Tokyo as we know it, that like it's a lot of show don't tell, and I think that was kind of a cool tactic to use. I love that there are people who anticipate the second coming of Akira. They're like, it's a religion that's been formed around Akira now. And so you have all these questions about, like, they imply Akira did some shit back in 1988, but he's been on ice for however long that whole situation. Like, I enjoyed a lot of the mystery, but there was a great deal of, I don't know. I felt like it had a very grand story to tell with a really intimate heart. And I feel like the intimacy got lost in just how big the movie was. Because when we bring it back down to it being about Kaneda and Tetsuo at the end of the movie, some of those like flashbacks that happen at the end of the movie, I kind of wish we would have gotten in a similar fashion to how I felt about Monkey Man. This is a little more extreme, but I wish we would have gotten those throughout the movie, these flashbacks. Maybe Kaneda is even remembering them as Tetsuo, like, gets away from them. They can't find Tetsuo. He's been locked away. Maybe he remembers how he tried to protect Tetsuo and all this stuff. Like, you know, I think that could have been really beneficial. It's just it's a really interesting way to format a story, and I felt like a lot of the payoff is reserved for the last couple minutes, and when you don't have a lot to go on. Because, like, I'm not going to lie to you, there for a while, there was a lot of stuff visually and some characterization that was telling me that, like, Kaneda is supposed to be, like, the good guy. He's supposed to be the hero. But I also wasn't getting that. Off
he kind
him
of felt
completely.
Like a side character, like, like the main story, like Tetsuo and following him and what's happening to him. Once that's on, that feels very much like the main story. And then Kaneda, like, it is a good part of the story, but it's like, okay, like, now we're checking in with him. Now let's see what's happening to him. And then whenever they meet up and everything links, then it's the one story. But like, they are separate for a little bit, and
I mean, the whole second act.
Yeah,
the whole second act is, I mean, like, I think it's cool. There's a lot of interesting stuff that happens during that time, a lot of important setup and a lot of important, mm-hmm. like, I think that this movie would be a lot better on a rewatch. I think it was just the trying to figure it out and trying to understand of the first watch that kind of muddled the experience for me. I think now that I know what's happening and know what's coming, I would probably have a better time with the movie.
Yeah. And I was trying to remember back to when I watched anime, if I really remembered, like, the emotional scenes hitting like they would. Because at the end of the day, we are reading subtitles for every single line because we don't understand the language. And you can get the emotion from the voice actors, and that's a reason why I like anime, is they heighten their emotion. Like, everything is very heightened, and so it's clear kind of what emotion they're feeling. But us having to read and literally translate the entire movie, I wonder how much that kind of just takes away from
The ending resonated with me to a degree, just because of, like, the humanness of it, like, just the, like, that was the best part that captures the intimacy of the movie. It's sort of like you don't realize this movie had an intimate heart until the very end, which is part of the problem. I feel like they should have maintained that throughout the movie. But I've often had a similar thought when it comes to, I mean, any foreign film from any part of the country. Like, Americans speak, people who speak English speak in a specific way. We have specific annotation. We have, like, emphasis. And that's something that's always struck me specifically with, like, comedy. Like, it's when it comes to physical humor and body humor and stuff like that, that's universal. But every language has its own version of what funny delivery is.
That's
and what
true. Yeah,
you know, like, and I think the same can be said for specifically voice acting in foreign films, you know, like, because, like you said, they heighten everything. Everything's elevated. It automatically also feels a bit unreal. Not in a bad way, in a good way. Like, I think that adds to the medium. I think that makes it even better. But, like, when it comes to, like, Parasite and Monster and so Lahine and so many different foreign films from Portrait of a Lady on Fire, so many of these different foreign films from all over the world that I've watched in live action where I'm looking at the people's faces and I'm seeing the emotion, like, that adds a humanness to it that gives it something I can go off of. And I feel like, and I mean, the same thing can be said for animated films everywhere. Like, voice acting, this is why voice acting is one of the most difficult jobs there is, I think, because I absolutely adored a lot of the voice acting in this movie, specifically the work by Tetsuo's voice actor, Nozomu Sasaki, very, very talented voice actor there. And I thought that, like, whenever he's calling out for help at the end of the movie, whenever he finally goes, "Help me," you know, and obviously I watched the subtitled version, not the dubbed version, so going off the English subtitle here when he says "help me," like, that was a striking moment, you know, the way Kaneda looks at him and is like, "Fuck, like, there's nothing I can do," you know, like, it's, there's this really universal feeling of helplessness, and, you know, it's gotten out of hand, and I appreciated that a great deal. But yeah, I do agree. There's not a, when it comes to the emotional resonance of the movie, I know at times what I'm supposed to be feeling, but I don't really feel it, you know?
I'd say the only time I got, like, emotional is at the very, very end, whenever it was just like the literal end visuals, when it was like the black and white kind of cycle of the, like, it kind of was showing kind of like the cycle of the universe and everything, but then also it's just Akira destroying and then Tetsuo push, you know, it's a lot of different things happening at once, but then, like, just the black and white and then the circle, and then I think there something being said, or was it just kind of serene music being played? I felt like there was something being said for some reason, but it was more of, like, the concept of it all. I was like, whoa, it just, it got big out of nowhere. And I'm like, I think it was when the scientist guy in his lab, he's looking at the like temporal aura, like, and Loki was the closest thing that I could like compare it to, you know. But this one's more like auditorial, which is cool. It like is like a waveform, which I thought was really cool. But whenever he's like, this must mean one thing only. This is the creation of the universe. And I'm like, oh, like, whoa, that's what's going on here? I'm like, sure, okay, maybe that's just the scientific way to look at it. I don't know. And it is just Akira and Tetsuo, you know, counteracting each other. And that is all that's happening. And maybe this mimics...
Well, I think that is what's happening, and as a result, it could create a universe, is sort of what the idea was for me.
Okay. So, like, Neo Tokyo, or everything that was enveloped in that white ball, you know, kind of sucked in and popped out somewhere else in a new... Kind of like Black Hole sucked it all in, all that information, all that knowledge, and then is now... in a new universe somewhere else.
That's kind of how I took it. That's definitely how I took it. And I thought there was an interesting, like, the character of Akira for not being, oh, sorry, in the movie, like, at all until the very, very end was a really interesting choice. I didn't, you know, obviously, I know, I don't know the movie. You know, I'm thinking Akira is going to be the main character of Akira. That's kind of what I came into it with. But I like the idea that he's... And I don't think this is by any stretch of the imagination a Christian movie, but this is kind of the only way I can put it, is that he's like a Christ figure, you know? Mm-hmm. He is, he's Neo, you know? Like, it'd be like if we made a Matrix movie where they were like, you remember what Neo did way back? It's Matrix Resurrections.
Yeah, this dude...
Matrix Resurrections is entirely inspired by Akira upon watching this.
There was kind of a line in there where... Maybe this is it. Maybe this is the line I was looking for, where someone was like, everyone has the power of Akira inside of them. It's just a matter of when it activates, how you decide to use it, you know. It's like, it's in everyone, and there will be, like, be a time in your life where Akira's power is activated in you, and it's up to you, you know, to see if it corrupts you or not, whatever. And I don't know, that was like the whole world that they're building. It is kind of very spiritual or religious, or I don't know. I don't know what to call it. It's not really sci-fi, but yeah. I mean, yeah, no, it's sci-fi, like, I guess, but,
no, it's a lot of stuff. I mean, yeah. Sci-fi action is specifically... There's like, some body horror that goes on here that's really gnarly. Like, visually, whoa, one of the just most astonishing-looking movies I've ever watched in my life.
Is this hand? Like, are they... I guess this is 88.
It's 88 anime. Yeah, this is...
Oh, my God. To think of, like the end, whenever Tetsuo is becoming the flesh monster thing, I don't know... You know, when he's just growing, to think of having to hand animate all of that growth and all of those weird things that are coming out of him. I don't, that's insane. And like all the wires going into the chair and then like coming out and then like him shoot, like it reminded me of another monster from something else. Like, man, it was kind of similar. And like when he shot his arm out and all the wires and stuff came out first, it seemed to me that whatever I know it from was like a clear inspiration. Like, I don't know. It was like they pulled it from
Akira
this. It looked like.
Obviously inspired it. Yeah, no, I mean, like it was familiar to me as well. I'm trying to remember. I'm right there with you. I feel like I've seen something very, very similar to this. But I don't know where.
Ooh,
but
that's gonna get me. It's gonna hit me tomorrow. You know, that's gonna be one of those things that'll hit me later. But I see the I don't know, in the Akira slide. You know, like that's what I've noted as kind of like an inspirate. Like it's just like a VFX kind of, like, it's done everywhere. Just because it's cool. It's just it is cool. And
it's really cool. And like, what was really dope about it, actually, like, unironically, not because of how iconic it was my favorite shot of the movie, just because it's in such a fantastic world. And like, knowing its influence and stuff does obviously influence this decision, but like, looking forward to it and thinking about when it's going to come, and then when it happens pretty early on in the movie, it's like a super cool action beat. It's not just like thrown in there. It's not just that's why I think like the best successor for the Akira slide is Nope, whenever Kiki Palmer slides at the end of the movie.
Okay.
It's my favorite post-Akira slide, because it's utilized in a way that is actually, like, impactful. Like, oh my god, that was fucking dope, you know? Like, and that's what this movie did very effectively, is that, like, I think everywhere else after this, it's just kind of slid in there as an homage, whereas this is the original. It gets to work as an action beat, and that bike, the costume design for Kaneda, like, that whole situation, fucking gnarly. Mm-hmm. Absolutely loved all that.
Wow.
And yeah, like, it is iconic. It's unquestionable, you know, like, but yeah, every frame was hand drawn, and then overlaid on a hand painted background.
There was one shot. A bike took off, and the tail lights, like the beam, not like Tron, whenever they turn on their, you know, beams and the beam stays behind them, but like the tail light, like, it stayed kind of behind them for a little bit, and like, it was like
the drag effect of like them moving fast,
like, but it was just the light from the tail, like, of their tail light, and then it slowly faded out, like, it, the camera was static and they just drove off like into the distance, and then eventually the shot faded to black. But before it faded to black, the light streaks from their brake lights, like in the back of their bike, stayed. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the last thing to fade. But it was...
Gotcha.
It was like the... I don't know how you hand animate that. It was, like... It was... fluid. Like, it was... I don't know. Like, I wonder... So it was hand animated, and then over... Like, there were hand paint or... paintings.
Yeah, each frame was drawn by hand on paper, then copied to a transparent piece of acetate called cell, which was then painted, dried, and photographed against a background, also painted by hand. This was the case for all animation at the time.
That is just... That's incredible. Not to say that making an animated movie on a computer today is any less impressive or, like, not as cool, but, like, just the real grunt work. I don't know. This is just, like, it's reason.
It's different, you know? And, like, there's... when it comes to drawing on a computer, it's a different level of difficulty, you know? That's still mostly what happens. It's just on a digital platform. It's not on paper and stuff.
But they have to... Every frame, they have to... They're looking at it in real life. And, like, there's nothing they can cheat on, you know? And, like, I feel like... With computers, it's like, oh, it's there, and like the frames come easily once you have like the first one. But in real life, you can't just copy and paste. You know, you got to actually draw that shit again. Like and that's why I will never, like, even though that the first two acts of the movie weren't my favorite or I wasn't into it, just the craft alone. Is enough.
Dude, it was gorgeous.
It
was gorgeous. Like, one of my favorite sequences in the movie, probably my favorite scene, is a gnarly animation. I called it the nightmare trip of misfit toys. When Tetsuo's powers awaken within him, the teddy bear and all this stuff. Well, I think that there's this really interesting idea that the movie's playing with childhood versus adulthood and how the powers are used for each of them. You know, like all the children who have the powers discover their powers much younger than Tetsuo. And Tetsuo makes it clear at some point that, like, whatever medication they're trying to give him is what results in the way they look and stuff. So, like, they haven't experienced enough of the world to hate the world the way Tetsuo does. And I think that this manifestation of his powers, like, it's literally his childhood leaving him, basically. Like, all these toys coming back
like,
up. And yeah.
Whenever he had, like, his everything just falls out of him. Like, they're, the visuals weren't. And why milk? That was weird. Sometimes in anime, they can't show blood, like red, you know, and they use white to, like, it's just implied that that's blood. And I didn't know if that's what they were going for, but then I'm like, oh, wait, blood has clearly been in this movie, like, before. I'm like, okay.
Yeah,
I'm,
no, like, this like is an R-rated
like,
anime.
Yeah, so, like, I haven't seen red, so I'm like, now, like, the childhood thing behind it, now I kind of see, like, milk and
probably
and
a touch of a Freudian sort of association with childhood there with the either breast milk or formula probably holding it all together.
But yeah, that was
creepy.
Like
that was my favorite sequence. Yeah. And then it culminates with him walking out of the room and then exploding the doctors and my favorite, the coolest shit of the movie whenever he's like getting overwhelmed and he just, wah, and like forces it out and like goes full fucking Star Killer. Force Unleashed and just splatters them up against walls and the blood's dripping from the ceiling and
from
all
that,
that
point on, I mean,
man,
from then on,
stop.
I'm in. Like if we got 30 minutes of something before, or maybe like I don't know, like if the first if just before then could have just been something, I don't know what it could have been, but man, that last part of the movie was pretty fucking sick. And yeah, the like the kids, I owe it like. Are they like, is their age, like, are they old, but just in young bodies, you know, like, it kind of appears that they have, like, older features of their face, you know, like, their face appears old, but also, like, their mouth, I think it's just their mouth, you know, that kind of looks old. But
the powerful kids,
and like I feel like
I was under the impression that whatever happened to them, like the way Tetsuo frames it, and obviously he's all eviled up at that point, but he frames it like whatever the government's been doing to them has caused them to appear that way.
I feel like they're just inside, they literally don't get to experience the world, they are inside, like, lab, you know, kind of. Guinea pigs or lab rats, and I feel like that's just why they're so pale, is because they don't get any sunlight. Does anyone get any sunlight, though? Is that, like, is sunlight not a thing in this world anyways? Because it comes back at the end. Maybe it's just a Tokyo thing. When the, like, because the clouds completely blocked out the sun, right? Like, and then at the end is whenever it first came back, or was it just nighttime, maybe?
I didn't clock any of that. I didn't clock that it was never daytime.
Maybe it was daytime. Because, I mean, at the end, there was... Maybe it's just the end, and it's like, you know, everything's good. Here's the sun. Yeah, I don't know why I maybe thought that it was, like, the sun's gone. I don't know what gave me that idea. Yeah, maybe the World War III and the first initial blast... Maybe is what gave me thought that that's what caused it, but
yeah, like it's some sort of fallout.
No, it definitely was daytime for some parts of the movie. Yeah, no, I think it.
I thought so.
It was. So I'm tripping there.
But the thing is that I think the first act did plenty to set up sort of the world. I think it could have done a little bit more. I think that it shrouds itself in mystery, and I've grown to a point where if the mystery is not the point of the movie. I don't want a fucking mystery, bro. I don't want a fucking mystery. I don't like it.
Give the characters
I'm okay
the
with
mystery,
it.
But I'm the audience member.
Yeah,
you know, like
I'm the audience.
I'm the viewer.
You know, like,
and
it's fine, and it can be good. It can be effective, and I think that there's a lot of examples of like small mysteries sort of paying off and not being crucial. But we're talking about the world that they're setting up here, and I think that like shrouding that in mystery. Is a tough ask, and I don't know. Maybe I'm tripping on that, but like
it kind of feels like I should have watched a season of television before I watched this movie, though. Like it feels like I kind of was ran into this world very quickly, and like I would have liked a backstory or something, I don't know, with all these kids and everything. And like Akira, maybe the point of Akira is that it's more of an idea. It's that even the Akira we see just so happened to be like the one that activated at the right time, did the right thing, and was the most gleaming example of who used the power correctly. But anyone could be capable. Well, is that the idea?
And it's also interesting framing it as framing the first thing Akira does as the right thing. You would think Akira is vilified in the eyes of everybody. Like, you would think that would be
so they what create he's viewed as. Akira. They know they're tampering with something like very powerful, like even from the beginning, right? Like, or is it because of what happened that they're like, now we have to be very careful with what we do with Akira? Or...
See, I don't know. I'm like, I don't know. It's, and I think that that's, I don't know if I just missed it. I don't know if the movie was just so overloaded that I don't know. The impression I get is that Akira, to my understanding, the powers were naturally occurring, and then the government tried to tamper with a power they didn't know.
Kind of a creepy, what was capable. Like they tracked everybody. They had everybody under surveillance, and like, you know, Tetsuo was like a blue dot versus everyone else a green dot, and they could read the like auras of people, like if they were just if they wanted to. Like it was like Tetsuo went into the little chamber thing, you know, that was cool. Whenever he's in the bed and the things are all floating over him, that reminded me of something else too. Some other visual when he's in the lab and all the sensors are reading him. But like it seemed
that was very, I mean, a lot of Matrix image. I think this influenced the Matrix a great deal in my head. I think Matrix was always kind of heralded as a live action anime, was kind of what it accomplished before anyone else could kind of manage it.
Americanified for sure. Just the guns.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know.
Guns. Lots of guns.
Need those.
Yeah, no, it's.
But yeah, here we're going with the concept of creating an entire universe and or just the sheer power, just literal power. Is what it seemed to kind of like. I do love one of my another shot potential that I did really like is whenever Tetsuo, I think he's breaking out from maybe being capped. They got him back. They gave him some medicine. He was in a cell for a little bit, but now he's leaving. I think it may be right after he kills the people in the hallway. He like flies for the first time, and he realizes he's like, I can do this too. He's like, he's flying and you know, he laughs, you know, he has that kind of evil laugh, but it shows like the whole city in the background, and like one building is like, I don't know, very bright behind him and just super tall. And he's just kind of floating there. I don't know. It just looked really, really cool. Like it to pick I one shot this. Is actually kind of tough. Like,
no, it is, dude. Like, I loved the way Neo Tokyo was animated. Like, one of my favorite shots early on in the movie is just a classic animation sort of tactic where a movie is taking place in the city, but, like, the foreground doesn't move hardly at all, but the background moves like crazy. And it's just city. It's just buildings and buildings behind, and stuff's, like, shifting, and I absolutely loved it.
I see. I thought you mean, like, when they're... Like, are you saying when they're on their bikes and, like, it's just flushing by them or just kind of, like...
No. I mean, like, it's a shot of the city. You are supposed to be seeing the city. It's not,
I see.
Yeah, it's not them on the bikes, but stuff's just kind of, like, moving, and it looks really pretty, man. I loved the animation. I thought it was gorgeous. I thought that the ending was beautifully animated, and as a culmination of the movie, it works really, really well, you know? I adored the, I thought that there was a really interesting thing that they're doing with Tetsuo there, where he's been selfish and selfish and selfish the whole movie, and his power when he's expanding there at the end, sucks everyone in and suffocates them, sort of in a self, like, everything's about him, he's bringing it all into him, and then the second he asks for help is when Akira shows up. The second he goes, help me, please, help me, that's when Akira shakes and shows up and all that. That's whenever, so mm-hmm. Akira is, again, I think it is, to a degree, this, and again, I don't think it's a Christian movie, but it's the mythology when it comes to religion that I am the most familiar with. I grew up in a Christian household, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. But, like, the idea of a benevolent God is lost on a lot of people about, like, well, how can a God be all-loving and all-knowing if he doesn't help when you don't ask for it? Well, and then this you have to seek him. You have to seek the help. You have to, you know, like, he was seeking him, but for the wrong reasons. And then the second he needs help, the second he needs it for the right reasons.
And is it a Neo thing? Do you actually need the help in the time, or is it better for you to not get the help in that time so you learn, and then you need the help when it's actually neat? You know, there's, I don't know. This did bring up a very cool kind of outlook or view. Like, it's not like I've never thought about the universe or these thoughts before, but I always like kind of another lens to look through it. Or even though this is sci-fi and anime and it's not real,
those are typically the more fantasy we get is typably the more we are able to play with these concepts in a more broad strokes way.
Human written, it's not like still, you know, like humans are voice acting this, humans are writing this, humans are drawing everything. Like, it is crazy what we're seeing, but it is, we are talking very, you know, philosophical and spiritual things. So I think they achieved what they wanted to. You know, I think they didn't set out just to make a cool action movie. You know, like, that wasn't the goal. They did, you know, the action was cool. The visuals were really, really cool. But then they also have this crazy storyline that I did not expect whatsoever. And that actually, in the third act, I was a part of. Like, there's only a few gripes I really have in the third act. Not really much in the.
And I mean, like, I don't even really have. There's something so intangible about what I don't love about this movie. I don't even know how to describe it. There's just something missing. There's something not clicking for me. It's fine. It works. It's just like, it looks really good. The voice acting's incredible. The action's super cool. I feel like there's something I'm supposed to be getting out of it that I'm not getting out of it. And I don't know what that is, but it's just kind of where I'm at. And I think that the first two acts, like, I hate to frame it like this because that it's usually with a much more negative connotation, because this movie is through and through well done. It looks good the whole time. It's beautifully animated the whole time. But the first two acts, up until Tetsuo really unlocks his powers, and I think that's somewhere in the middle of the second act, pretty much halfway through the movie, might even be earlier than halfway in the movie.
Mm-hmm. I think it's actually around 45 to 50 minutes.
Yeah, I'm like, actually, that might be the beginning of the second act of the movie, if we're being for real. So really, the first act's just kind of unremarkable. I don't remember it.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I like the things that are happening, like the kind of slow revolution that's kind of building, with, you know, starting very low level and, you know, kind of being the ignorant one, being like, I'm just a biker gang, and then being kind of thrown into that world and then seeing you know, kind of everything. You know, it's cool. And
that was also, like, the specifics of a lot of the socio-political state were really interesting, because they don't dive into it a lot. They just kind of show you the state of the world, and it seems like Japan's in the midst of being a capitalist dystopia where the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, there's a giant wealth disparity. Feels like the 1% is running things, and the rest of them have to just deal with the fallout. And that's an interesting angle that I think that it to understand that's where Tetsuo and Kaneda and these kids come from. It's what makes them. That's part of what makes them the heroes of the movie is that they are not the government. They are not the the regime that seemingly stands over Neo Tokyo. Because there did seem to be a like fascist sort of colonial holding on Neo Tokyo.
And the colonel kind of we did kind of talk off mic about the colonel and like maybe our military, you know, just immediate military views kind of go into that because off rip, there's really nothing bad about the colonel. Like he never shows anything where it's like, oh, I don't give a fuck about life. I'm just going to do whatever I have to do. You know, like he is at least caring for these kids, like the kids, the 24 through 20, I don't know, whatever. But like, and he does have good moments where, you know, he tells the soldiers like, stand down, you know, look at what we're doing. We're fighting each other. It's pointless. Like, what are we doing? And whenever he goes to the top, you know, the high table or whatever they call it, Supreme Council, there are a bunch of, some of them are sleeping. Some of them are yelling, you know,
yeah,
they're yelling.
Disconnected
like,
assholes.
They're fucking, yeah it's like, I would rather the, you know, I'm not for a single ruler making all the decisions and stuff, but in this moment, it's clear. Like, yeah, no, don't give any power to that table whatsoever. They like it. I would prefer it in the colonel's hands right now. And so I was kind of going back and forth with the colonel, you know, like he's good and everything, but like it felt like it was supposed to be coming from Kaneda and the kids and everything, you know, like it. And I don't know, it felt that it was coming from him a little too much.
And I think that there might be something there to go back to the children versus the adults, and that's what makes Kaneda and Kaori and Kaori and Kai and all of them like special is that they fall in the in between, you know, like they're seemingly not quite adults, but they're not small children. And I think that there's this really there's kind of an interesting thing they're doing. Obviously, I mentioned the childhood versus adulthood thing, and I think that with Kaneda and Tetsuo and Kai and all their whole group, they kind of exist in between things, which I think, I mean, like there's an interesting aspect of this movie that could be viewed as coming of age almost, which is interesting, just in the most fantastical epic setting you possibly could, you know, like a kind of at this stage in life, everyone has a choice. You know, you can go to be this thing or you can go to be that thing. You can go to be Tetsuo or you can go to be Kaneda. And I think that when it comes to like the colonel, I think they might be saying something about how he was once a Kaneda, but now he works within a system that makes him nothing. You know, it just makes him a neutral point, you know. It doesn't make him good, it doesn't make him bad. And I think that that's one of the interesting things about the society, why we might not feel too greatly one way or the other about them, is because part of the point is that they're, most of them are kind of nothing. Most of them are just kind of like unremarkably existing and doing whatever they have to get by. And that's what makes guys like Kaneda stick out. That's what makes guys like this crew, these biker gangs, kind of stick out. So that was kind of like the best idea I had for what made the colonel an interesting character. Because you're right, he's not likable. He's not unlikable, but he's not likable. He's just kind of there, you know. But I think that was purposeful. You
to
know?
Show
I don't think it was
what.
Yeah.
A good person in the system is like the system is what takes all of everything away. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it ends up making you this way regardless of whether or not you were a good or bad person. If you were a bad person, it makes you worse. If you were a good person, it makes you negligible.
Love how it all culminates in a stadium. I don't know. Like just or whatever that was. I don't know. It's like an under construction
stadium. Yeah, the Olympics.
Stadium.
The Olympics were coming.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, yeah. You know, like, it feels like that just happens a lot. And not just, like, superhero movies. Like, Shazam is ringing a bell for whatever reason that, like, it's in a base.
Days,
like,
of Future Past.
Yeah.
And
okay, there you go. Yeah, it just, I don't know. I love a good old stadium culmination. But that was pretty sweet. Like, whenever he's in the throne and he has, like, Akira behind him in, like, the test tube bottles, you know? Because I guess that's another interesting aspect, that whenever the colonel is like, ah, now you know the truth, that's all that's left of Akira, we put him through every single test that was known to man at the time, and this is all that remains, you know? And I guess, I don't know, like, I feel like I should just trust his word. Like, I don't know why he would be lying here. But my thought was just, like, he exploded, and this is all that was left, you know? Like, this is literally all that they could find after, like, the explosion event. Because, like, how do they have him after? What happens after that explosion? Like, was Akira fully healthy and he did that? And then he is still fully healthy afterwards. And then that's why he has, like, a religious following, you know, is because, like, because there was a moment where people on the street, like, were like, this is Akira, like, this is the second coming of Akira. Like,
yeah.
Like,
Akira is a known figure. People know who Akira is, you know, like, it's not like. So that's why I'm like, the mystery and the history of Neo Tokyo is
like, yeah, and
I don't love that aspect of it. Because I don't know, and maybe I should be thinking about it a little harder, but I don't know why you do that. I don't know why you just drop us into a world with implied history and not
unless
explore
it is
that history.
Supposed to just be God power, like, you know, it is unexplainable. There's no that's all you need. Like, there's no other backstory you need other than it's absolute power. And
yeah, and I mean, like, I don't even need absolute explanation for what the power is or where it comes from, but, like, just clarification on
the event that happened. Maybe.
That event, like, it seems to be the same as what happens at the end of this movie, you know. But instead of offsetting Tetsuo, it was offsetting World War III. It seems to be the ending of World War III. Is kind of how I looked at it. But you're right. Is Akira still around after that? Akira's not here after that. Why? Like,
did he get his following before this, before that event, or after? Was it the event that caused his following, or was he, like, I guess that would be nice
because
to know.
Am I wrong for kind of interpreting it like the government's trying to convince people that Akira didn't do this? Like, am I wrong? Like, I feel like they decide it's, maybe I'm just interpreting it the way that, like, a modern interpretation would be. Like, the government would try to convince them that they were nuked. Is that kind of the idea?
See, I mean, like, Akira is worshipped and known, but I don't think the people know that some of him still exists. Like, and under all these, like, in this, the military bases and everything. Like, no, I think the general public has no clue of what's going on military-wise. I don't know. Like, I can't give you an answer that, like,
that's
I feel
what's
confident
interesting. I'm
in.
Like, Akira felt like it felt like a secret. So how are there people who are worshiping the idea of Akira?
I guess the second coming. You know, it's like a hope. It's like a, like, we have, you know. We don't know
right,
what happened.
But they had to know. They have to know Akira existed in the first place at that point. So that means Akira was a figure of some sort.
Oh, so was the military's explanation of the explosion maybe that explosion was an attempt to destroy Akira, and maybe that is how Akira gained the following. that they did. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's possible. I suppose they literally could have been trying to destroy Akira anyway, and that's why he did that. You know, like that could be a possibility. But because it's not addressed in this movie, it makes me feel like it's not actually that important. You know, like
Maybe we're focusing on the wrong thing. Sort of thing, like,
but that's what's interesting is because of him showing back up and him reemerging, and I'm just more curious about the ins and outs of how Akira became a religious figure, yeah. You know. If this power exists within everybody and everybody has the capability of tapping into it, why do they just get their hands on the people it does early enough that that's sort of how that happens? I don't really.
Mm-hmm. And then
were these people already selected and they tested on them to bring the powers out?
Because Tetsuo's childhood, he. Like, was he wasn't, I don't know, was he orphaned? He didn't have any, like, parents, did he?
Mm-hmm.
And then, his early memories, he met, like, Kanada. I remember, like, you know, mm-hmm. those guys beat me up, too. You know, it's whatever. But, like, before that, did he come out of, like, a lab? Was that where, like, was he, like, maybe he was watched from the very beginning and, like, he was, because I guess there's a whole other side of the story where Kyoko, is that right? Yeah, Kyoko kind of seems like the rogue kid, you know, like the one who is acting against everyone else's plans and everything. Like it's mm-hmm. the greater plan, sort of, you know, and she's the one that kind of gets into Kai's head and is like telling them, no, you go down this level, you'll find your way there. Or in one of my favorite scenes, Kanada and Kai in a cell together, or maybe I think it is a cell, but then they're just kind of getting to talking, and then she's like, but what if, you know, we're all connected, what all this knowledge has to come from somewhere, you know, we're humans, we came from apes, and those apes, they, you know, came from blah, and all, and everything came from these single cell organisms, and then it turns out that it's not actually Kai talking, it's Kyoko talking through her, and then like them slowly realizing that that's what's happening over time too is really cool, like them figuring it out.
That was another, was Kai talking through, or Kyoko talking through Kai?
I think so. I don't know when it started. You know, like that line's kind of blurred, but it seemed to be that.
Well, and that's
was...
what's interesting too, is that it also felt like, was there any particular reason she chose Kai? It seemed like there was a, like,
just because it's the person with Kanada. I think like Kanada is the ultimately the person who has been given this power at the end, right? Is that like? He has the is that the idea, or is it gone? It is gone to another universe, and he does it. Because, like, he glows white a little bit at the end, like, after he kind of puts it in his hands, you know? And, like,
mm-hmm.
like, it feels that that's the whole, like, the whole point of all of this was to teach Kanada to not do what Tetsuo did. And, like, here's what not to do. Now you have the power. Do what you will with it in the future. And I like the end where the three kids realize, like, if we do go in there, we won't make it out. But the three of us mm-hmm. will, you know, it will work. And it seemed that Kyoko kind of, she could, like, see the future, you know. Like,
yeah.
They all kind of had different abilities. She seemed to be the one that was, I don't know, Oracle-esque. And then her talking through Kai, I think, is just to send Kanada, like, on the path he's supposed to go down and be in the right spot at, you know, at the right time. And so everything can, can happen, because it is, they can teleport, you know, like if,
right,
like they just, the colonel, like, oh, boop, you're out, go in that tunnel, you'll be safe, you know, and then like at the time when Kanada needs to be out, that he's out. So like, I don't know, there was a lot of things needed to happen in that sequence, and I think Kyoko was a large factor in kind of,
oh yeah,
in making it happen, but an almost character nod, just because of that alone. But like, I can't, Kanada feels like that's what the whole story is for. Tetsuo is the main character, and that's who we follow, and like the power struggle that he sees is really cool. But like, character, I at least attached to Kanada a lot more, and liked him as a character a lot more. But yeah, I wish we just knew more about this, the religious factor, or maybe like World War III. Like, how was more of the world involved, or is this just Japan? Like, is like, was this a globe? I mean, it's World War III, and it seems that it's the end of World War III. So like, I don't know. I would love to know.
Well, I think there's something there, you know, like what was the end of World War II?
Is it the same world? Are we in the same world? You know, like, I'm assuming if they're calling it World War III,
I'm assuming
World War
II
happened
like
the way it happened.
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah.
That's
the other curiosity I had, was how much does this actually tie to the real history of Japan, and what is
that could be an explanation?
Like,
the
sort of
US,
recontextualizing,
like maybe. That's why Akira is so followed, is Japan didn't destroy it. The world destroyed Akira. And that's why, you know, and Japan says, like, look at what the world did. We had our Akira and they destroyed it. It ended the war. Mm-hmm. It ended the war because Japan doesn't have anything, you know, they don't have their power anymore or whatever. But yeah, it is just, it's kind of left up there. It is.
Yeah. It's just an interesting world they built, man. I'm intrigued by it. Ultimately, I didn't love the movie. I definitely didn't dislike it, but I there's something that didn't click for me, and I wish it did. It feels like it should have. It just didn't.
I'm there with you.
I feel like the pod has been evident in that regard. Like, it's just like, I don't even, most of it's been us asking questions, not even really discussing
the actual movie.
So I mean,
yeah,
it's fine. It's fine. It's just there's a lot of stuff that I didn't get, which I don't love feeling that way. I don't like feeling like I didn't get it. But I didn't. It wasn't something that was easily got on my end.
Yeah,
so
I don't.
Here I am.
I don't think that's your fault though, because I'm asking the same questions. You know, I'm in the same boat, and maybe it is just, maybe you do just need to watch it twice, but you shouldn't need to. Like, that, a first watch is the most important watch.
Should do
for
it.
A movie.
Yeah.
Like that should do it. And I'm in the same boat as you. So,
I mean, it's unquestionably cool. There's a lot of really cool stuff. And I mean, it's beautifully animated, which is to a point all you really need, but you know, sucks that we're kicking off a project with a movie where I don't really know how to talk about it.
Yeah, and
that was
maybe, who knows? The bad or not, this isn't bad, but it can show why the next movies are good or even better. Is that it? Mm-hmm. We saw the weaknesses that an action movie can have. If it's not heartfelt, I think that like the emotional resonance is huge. Like, it maybe, if they did explain the war and the religious factor, that emotional resonance would have been there, because that's kind of what that does serve. And maybe that's
I mean, like I mentioned at the top of the episode, that it was really grand and the intimacy was lost because of that grandiosity. But the thing is that even in that grandness, they didn't expound upon it nearly enough to be anything more than cool to me. And maybe it's, Like I said, maybe I just didn't get it. Maybe it's something just didn't click with me. But hey, I'll own up to that. But.
Is this not just Dune's story, but in Neo Tokyo? It's I don't want to call it Dune's story. It's just a second coming story.
No, yeah, I mean, like that's the thing is that like I feel like there's more depth here than I am perceiving.
Mm.
I can't find it. I can't find it. And I wish I could. I usually can. I'm pretty good at watching movies.
Yeah.
And I think it's just like I literally I literally went online after I finished the movie to look at the synopsis of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
I was like, did I miss something? I was like, did I not get it? And they were like I found a rundown that was like, so here's what happens in the movie. And I'm like, no, that's exactly what I thought happened in the movie. Okay.
It is kind of just chaos for a little, like we are just kind of on to the next thing. Like it is just, sometimes it is a crazy horror sequence and we're just on to the next thing and moves kind of fast and no, doesn't really give you time to think of what happened. And so yeah, I don't know. That feeling is there. It's I don't know.
I think the movie's good. So. I think the movie's good. It's just like because of the kind of movie watcher I am, it prevented me from enjoying this to the maximum to my maximum capability. So but yeah, before we rate this movie, if you would head to patreon.com/pennybloompod where you'll find over 50 hours of exclusive content, all sorts of book reviews, comic book reviews, movie reviews, and the like. For $3 or for $1.50 a month, you can support this podcast financially, which is huge because it costs me money and I don't make any off of it unless it's over there. You can get some early access content. All the movies we've got coming up in the next 3 weeks basically are available over there. Head to Twitter, follow at Penny Bloom Pod, follow on Instagram at Penny Bloom Podcast, and TikTok at Penny Bloom Podcast. You can watch on YouTube now. Just look up Penny Bloom Podcast and subscribe. We're there. And leave a 5-star rate and review wherever you might be listening and continue to download. But yeah, on a scale of 1 to 10, enjoyment wise, how you feeling?
If I'm rating the last act, I'm at like an 8, high 8's 9 even out of 10. Mm-hmm. The whole movie overall, all of this mystery that's left up, all of these feelings, they do go somewhere, and it does make the ranking go down a little bit. I think I'm 7, maybe. Part of me wants to go 6, 7, 5, but I don't know if it's that unenjoyable. I don't know if I'm still having.
No, I like it. Yeah. I like the movie.
So I think 7 it's maybe the floor. Maybe.
Yeah. No, and I'm with you. I enjoy the way the movie looks, and I think that's big for me. But and I think that it's really cool, and a lot of the cool stuff carries it far enough to be 7 something for me. 7.25 feels like it's my kind of my ceiling. I think 7 or 7.25 is kind of where I'm at enjoyability wise. I think it's better than that. I think critically it'll fare well, but it didn't click with me.
And I guess now that like Tetsuo's power kind of activates, it might be the start of the second act. And that's like, I was kind of under the impression that like the third act was the part that I liked and the first two were whatever. But the second act might be a little more interesting than I thought. It's definitely the first act that is
I mean, it's
not.
It's slow going too. Like it is hard to get into. At least it was for me. And then whenever that happens, I'm kind of like the story takes a shift. That's like, oh, okay, yeah, we can do this. I didn't know that's what this movie was. Mm-hmm. So it's. It's interesting. I ultimately like most of the movie, but there's enough that makes me just personally annoyed that I don't understand it. Not like it's the movie, like it might be the movie's fault for me not understanding it, but I do I kind of blame myself for being like, I don't know what's going on. So
I don't think so. I don't think there's much. You are a very good movie watcher now. Like, it's not like we've watched more complicated movies than this, and we've talked about.
I think my problem is that I'm trying to grasp at something that's not there, but a lot of people seem to think that it's there, which is why I'm like,
That's the other part that is kind of getting to me, is that this is, and maybe it is.
This is a classic. Like, people love this movie.
Mm-hmm. And it could just be off the visuals and the inspiration that it, you know, it's like clear inspiration in a lot of things, but I don't know. A 7's not bad, you know?
I like the movie.
Yeah, that's the very start of the, all right. This is
good
beginning
scores,
good.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know, I think I'm chilling at a 7, I think, flat for me.
I'm cool with that.
Okay.
I'm cool with that.
But critically,
it's good.
Yeah. No complaints visually, no complaints voice acting, no complaints with anything of the production side. It is just the story and the unclearness of,
and I mean,
of
like,
certain things.
The general story at large, like the thing that it really reminded me of was The Creator.
Mm.
I think that The Creator is a really good comparison specifically for the conversation we had at the top of the show for like different languages and how different things can resonate with you based on, you know, live action versus animation and then your language versus a foreign language. If The Creator is and even animated, I probably don't get the same resonance out of it.
It is the face.
If it is, like, it's the faces, man. Faces are really important. And I think that you can only, and specifically with anime style, there's nothing, like, it's not real. It doesn't feel real to me. It does feel fantastical. And like, that's not a dismissal of the emotionality of it. Like, it had, like, things that are fantastical emotionally resonate with me all the time. So, like, I'm like, I don't really know what I'm trying to say.
I mean, with the medium, like, animation, it doesn't automatically make the movie worse, but there are drawbacks. Like, you are losing certain things that you do get with live action, and a big, big thing that you're losing is facial emotion. Like, that. A human face can show so much emotion. Like, we have 200 something muscles in our face, but in animation, there's zero muscles back there. You know, their mouth moves a little bit, but it's not even following their words that they're even really saying. So they can move eyebrows and change the shape of the eyes, you know, or whatever. But the reason the voice actors are having to go so above and beyond is because they're having to counteract for the no face. Like, in live action, it's just there. You don't even need audio at all sometimes for facial acting.
Yeah.
It's silent.
And that's so. So the grandiosity of the story and like the story at large is really cool, which is something I feel the way about Creator. But then you get into the specifics of it and like just, and it loses a little bit for me. The performances are solid. They do everything they can within the bounds of what they're given. And I think that mostly it's a good fucking movie. I would say the floor for this one is 8.25. Even.
Yeah.
Like,
in the eights, it felt right. Somewhere in the eights. Yeah, I'm liking it. I'm thinking like 8.5. Like, I guess to compare it to some others, that A Life Aquatic is an 8.5. Man, really?
Do you feel like it's worse than Life Aquatic or better than Life Aquatic?
I think I like Life Aquatic more. Maybe it's Isle of Dogs. Isle of Dogs is an 8.5. No. I put Isle of Dogs is kind of one where it's like this it's the craft. The craft of that one was like, wow. Like, that's kind of what got me there, and the story kind of had some things.
I mean,
maybe kind of.
I say we kind of even it out. Yeah, I say we even that out with Isle of Dogs. Then I think 8.5 is a good.
I do like
good
that
spot to land.
Yeah, I think that does. I think I do like that comparison. And that would shake it out to an 8 flat overall, which...
Pretty strong. Pretty strong. Did good
I gave
there.
It a 4 on Letterboxd. So that works
I gave
out.
It a 4.5. I thought it was good. You know, I was like, I thought it was good. It didn't resonate with me, but I thought it was at least cool. And I think that that's important. But,
okay.
Yeah. No, I think that that's a good place to land. And we'll, at least an interesting starting point for our Action Movies Galore project. And we'll be back this Friday to continue the project with Die Hard, also from 1988, going from Japanese anime to just all American action, which is super, super fun. Very excited to talk Die Hard. Shamefully, never watched it. Never watched Die Hard. Never seen
boat.
It.
I'm in the same boat as
so
you.
We're a couple classics. First week of Action Movies Galore that neither of us had seen, so that's what's coming this Friday. But in the meantime, we're going to split the difference by kicking off our Anya Taylor-Joy Actor Spotlight on Wednesday with the movie Emma, and we'll be joined by Claire DeGennaro for that. I'm so very excited. And that's Action Movies and Anya Taylor-Joy the next several weeks. Next Monday, we'll be back with Hard Boiled, the John Woo directed action film. Super excited for that. I believe this is the only animated film on the ride. The rest are going to be all going to be live action. So that'll be exciting. With that, I was Colton Robertson. I was joined by Joseph George. Thank you very much, homie.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Oh, and it's always a pleasure to have you. And remember, peace, love, and bloom. And the future is not a straight line. It is filled with many crossroads. There must be a future that we can choose for ourselves.